Thanks for downloading ThistlePod. I'm Fiona Ritchie, delving into our NPR programme archive, and this time coming up with readings for Christmas, the winter solstice, Hanukkah, New Year, and all your holiday celebrations. Margaret Kennedy wrote and performed all the music. These excerpts come from a Scottish anthology for the season, The Midwinter Music. Frost a mind and snaw, and a bairn coming hame frae the school greeting nearly we called. But seeing, for a' that, the icicles of the ditch, the snaw plough's marbled tracks, and the print o' rabbit's feet at the hole of the wire. Bairn, you're blue, we called. An apron warmed at the fire, and frosted fingers rubbed till they dirl wi' pain. Buttered toast and tea, the yellow licht o' the lamp, and the cat on the clouty rug afore the fire. At length Edinburgh, with her satellite hills and all the sloping country, are sheeted up in white. If it has happened in the dark hours, nurses pluck their children out of bed and run with them to some commanding window whence they may see the change that has been worked upon earth's face. Oh, the hills are covered with snow, they sing, and winter's new come fairly, and the children, marvelling at the silence and the white landscape, find a spell appropriate to the season in the words. The reverberation of the snow increases the pale daylight and brings all objects nearer the eye. The Pentlands are smooth and glittering, with here and there the black ribbon of a dry stone dyke and here and there, if there be wind, a cloud of blowing snow upon a shoulder. An indescribable cheerfulness breathes about the city, and the well-fed heart sits lightly and beats gaily in the bosom. It is New Year's weather. As for skating, there is scarce any city so handsomely provided. Duddingston Loch lies under the abrupt southern side of Arthur's Seat. The surface is thick with people, moving easily and swiftly and leaning over at 1,000 graceful inclinations. The crowd opens and closes and keeps moving through itself like water, and the ice rings to half a mile away with the flying steel. As night draws on, the single figures melt into the dusk until only an obscure stir and coming and going of black clusters is visible upon the loch. A little longer and the first torch is kindled and begins to flit rapidly across the ice in a ring of yellow reflection, and this is followed by another and another until the whole field is full of skimming lights. It was dark by four in midwinter, and coming home from school in the December dusk to tea in the dining room with the fire blazing and the red silk shade of the low-hanging chandelier lit up by the bulbs inside, one was conscious of a theatrical shift in scene, as of a curtain lifted. And in the streets outside, the little fruit shops and fancy goods stores and grocers decorated for the Christmas season with mounds of tangerines set in half-globes of silver paper, with net stockings filled with cheap toys and bells of coloured paper hanging in the window, would repeat the theme in a different key, festive windows lit in the darkness to challenge the December murk. On a clear day, the dusk would turn true violet in colour, and the dark outline of the castle would stand out on the horizon in romantic gloom. We did not observe Christmas, of course. We kept instead the more or less contemporary Jewish festival of Hanukkah, but the Christmas atmosphere always seemed proper and acceptable, and it never seemed to me that I was in any way cut off from it in virtue of our not keeping the actual day. And the coloured Hanukkah candles and my father's tenor voice leading us in the old hymn, Rock of Ages, mingled in my mind with the illuminated windows, with the silver tangerines and the box of crackers and the loops of tinsel, with the old castle looming black in the purple evening, and the sense of the darkening city beyond falling away to the Firth of Forth. Hanukkah was Edinburgh in December. It was strange, I suppose, though it did not seem strange to me then, this easy blending of Christmas and Hanukkah, of Jewish history and Edinburgh atmosphere. Hanukkah, the Feast of Lights, commemorates a miracle wrought in the temple after the successful revolt by Judas Maccabeus and his heroic companions against the paganising forces of Antiochus Epiphanes. Yet Hanukkah to us was also the distribution of pokes of sweets to Jewish children after the special service in the Graham Street Synagogue, and walking home afterwards in the dark December evening, savouring the atmosphere of Edinburgh at night during the Christmas season. On Christmas Day, we hae a feast, fit for the wise men frae the east, big clouty dumpling decked wi' holly, trifles and joggly jillies jolly. Veggies can keep their meatless stew, we've chicken, lamb and turkey too. Small wonder Santa's robes were red, wi' all the blood that had been shed. In Bangladesh, a wee bit lad, grat for the mate that nane was had, yowled for some rice the morn to see, but nane had ony rice to gie. For him, nae joy or Christmas cheer, his close companions, hunger, fear. When will oor red-robed Santa kind keep Bangladesh broon bairns in mind? The winter night was utterly silent. No dog barked, no owl screeched in the frozen forests. Then suddenly, like a vast golden curtain, the aurora borealis swept along the northern horizon. For a moment, the lights hung motionless, then they wavered and changed to pink. It seemed that I heard a sharp sound like the crack of a whip. Could it have come from the sky, or could it have been that the shifting lights, recalling to my subconscious the chromatic cloaks of clowns, gave me the impression that I was the solitary spectator of some stupendous celestial circus commanded by a spectral scarlet-coated ringmaster. But as the sound ricocheted away down the ice-fringed river, the lights in the sky changed to mauve and blue, and then, shifting sideways, dissolved to reappear a moment later in stripes of brightest silver. For several minutes, 100 miles from the surface of the earth, the lights shifted, forming and reforming in columns and ribbons and draperies of ever-changing colours. And then, as suddenly as they had appeared, they vanished. And I was left rubbing my eyes, half dazed with sleep, wondering if the whole vision had been a dream. Of all the red-letter days in the Scots calendar, Hogmanay, the last night of the year, is perhaps the most beloved. Hearts are opened, warm friendship and kindly deeds abound. It is supposed to have had its origin in the flitting of the little people, the expulsion of all bad things, and the moving in of a new set of fairies with a load of good luck. The traditional first foot, the first dark man to cross the threshold, brought gifts representing plenty in fuel, food and drink. In the old days, he carried in his pocket his personal first footing cup, in shape like a whisky glass in copper or brass, the stem unscrewed and fitted into the reversed cup when not in use. Unhygienic, but very handy when offering or receiving a dram. First footing doubtless took place in the glen in my childhood, with visiting neighbours bearing gifts of shortbread and black bun, and drams continually refilling the first footing cups. In Ballater, in the early 1890s and possibly later, the chief excitement on Hogmanay night was the arrival of the village lads with blackened faces and wearing weird costumes, who called at every house to perform a traditional play, which had among its characters Galashan, with his sword and pistol, Sir William Wallace, and good old Dr. Brune, the best old doctor in the toon. In countless forms, this play is known all over the British Isles and is of great antiquity. We arrayed ourselves in the notion of fancy dress and put on homemade masks, our so-called false faces. First we went to the study door to serenade my father, and then to caddle my mother amid explosive giggles, the old rhyme she had taught us. Rise up, good wife, and shake your feathers. Don't think that we are beggars. We are children come to play. Rise up and give our hogman aye. Up sticks, down tools. Don't think that we are fools. We are children come to play. Rise up and give our hogman aye. During the solstice, the sun seemed to stand still. The Norsemen kept the 12 days from December 22nd as the festival of Yule, and all work involving a circular action ceased. The flail was not used, nor the rotating quern stones. Cartwheels, spindles, all were still. In the remote Northern Isles, occupied for centuries by the people of Western Norway, Yule has always been a special time. At the turn of the century in North Ronaldsay, the low stone houses were outwardly silent and dark in the biting wind, but inside there was noise and bustle. The rooms had all been cleaned and scrubbed, crisp oatcakes had been baked on the iron yettling or girdle, and beer bannocks, big as soup plates, cooled on a wire tray. A pig had been killed when the moon was waxing, and there was pork to fry. There was mutton from the Yule sheep, specially chosen at the Yule Pond, when all the men went to the shore to catch a fat, healthy sheep for the family. Mealy puddings were made from the oatmeal ground in the island mill and stored in the wooden girnel. A woman's reputation depended on the beer bannocks, mutton and mealy puddings provided for neighbours who came to bring in the new year. Outside in the barn and brewhouse, the men had been brewing ale. Malt was made from beer, the primitive form of barley still grown on the island. The beer was threshed and dressed, steeped in water, dried, spread out on a stone floor and turned. It was dried in the kiln, winnowed, cleaned and crushed. Then the malt was ready. Some women were famous for brewing good ale. During the fermentation process, extreme care was necessary, and the process had to be helped by loud yells and singing. Hogmanay was the most important day with its own customs. Every woman had to make sure all the washing was done so that there were no dirty clothes in the house for the new year. The floor was swept inwards towards the fire so that luck wasn't swept out of the house. There were football matches on the links. The young people walked to the lighthouse and there was a dance. The men of the township met on the evening of Hogmanay and visited each house in turn, where they were given mutton, beer bannocks, oatcakes, cheese, and as much ale as they could drink. Woe betide the woman who was not free-handed with her hospitality. Sometimes the ale was heated on the fire with sugar and poured steaming into spongeware ale cans. Old ballads were sung like The Bride's Lament, The Braes o' Balquhidder, and The Ship That Never Returned. Tales from long ago were retold, who was sib to whom, and other details of genealogy, and there was dancing, eating and drinking until dawn had come again. The celebrations went on for several days, since some households stuck to the old calendar in any case, for Yule was a bright light in the darkness of winter, something to look forward to and remember afterwards. Open the door for the old year. It is the pertin time. Open the door for the new year and let the bairn win hame. Bundle your wintered joy and grief on the back of the year that's done. Open your heart for the new life and let the bairn come in. Readings from the Midwinter Music, a Scottish anthology for the season, with new music written and performed by Margaret Kennedy. At thistleradio.com, you'll find a playlist of this Thistle Pod. NPR's The Thistle and Shamrock airs radio like this each week. Find out how to tune in to public radio or hear an audio stream at thistleradio.com. I'm Fiona Ritchie. Thanks for joining me.